no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
So, Natalie wanted to see the Devils. Right, because we were sitting there, I was just like, "You got to see this. This thing's wild." And we, as we started it, she was like, "I wonder why it was banned." She was like, "Ken Russell's not a toucher, right?" And I was like, "I don't think he's a toucher. No. I don't think he did any gripping.
I don't think so. No, the Devils, the movie that is, of course, it's the movie based off the book, The Devils of Ludon. Yeah,
but I don't think Ken Russell was doing any children,
no.
Right?
I mean, it was the 70s, so I'm not going to, like, I have no idea what happened in the 1970s. I don't know.
But there's a scene where, so we're watching it, and all of a sudden it cuts to this fantasy scene where Oliver Reed as Jesus Christ, and he's fucking nailed to the cross, and and weird, like, sex noises, like,
right,
fighting against the nails, and he's visibly hammered throughout this whole movie.
Of course.
He pulls himself off the nails, and then the main nun comes up to him. They start fucking hard making out. Like, you know when you see people's teeth hit?
Ooh.
Where it's just like slapping each other. And he's full in Jesus regalia, and I'm just like, whoa. She starts going fucking south, right? And we're both like, oh my God, she's just about to fucking start blowing Jesus Christ, right? But then she sticks her tongue in his side wound and just goes, just fucking doing cunnilingy on it. And I was like, happy Easter to our family.
Absolutely. Well, that's not healthy at all. And of course, if you do watch that movie, Oliver Reed looks exactly like Jack Black from Nacho Libre, which is quite bizarre. I don't know why they did that. But hey, everyone, welcome to the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel, staring at the beautiful teeth and face of Marcus Parks.
Thank you, Ben.
And we have the recently honeymooned Henry Zebrowski in beautiful sunny Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Well, I have no idea how powerful this movie The Devils is. But it is
bonerific. That's the only way I could really describe it. Bonerific in a way that is so deeply satanic that it's just such a celebration of nun's bush hair, man.
Well, it sounds like it. And Rotten Tomatoes gave it 75%.
Not bad.
Nothing But Trouble is still at 7%. And this is rocking 75%.
Well, it's because Nothing But Trouble only has Little Devil, which and The Devils has the Big Devil. And there's one scene where there's a nun straddling a candle, jerking it off, right? Like she's trying to make it come. And then this is in real life. These are actors too, because this is in the 70s. So these are real people doing it. She's licking the flame of the candle as she goes. And I was like, I want to go to a party with this woman.
Well, it sounds like a fire hazard. It sounds like a Great White concert's about to go down, and everyone's going to die in a bar that's burning. Roger Ebert, just quickly here, he made a review. He wrote a review about this movie, and this is a quote from Roger Ebert's review. He says, "I don't know about anyone else, but frankly, I left the cinema theater feeling like a new, a different, and yes, a better person." He goes on to say, "The poisons of our political system had been drained from me." So yep. As Henry had an erection, evidently Roger Ebert, like, had a spiritual experience where he just saw them grinding on Jesus Christ, who looked like an alcoholic, and was like, "Now I understand capitalism. What's going on?
He came his khakis watching it, and I can also hear him right after saying,
absolutely jaw-dropping experience.
All right. Well, let's get on to part two of The Devils of Ludon.
So when we last left Urbain Grandier, is it Grandier or Grandier?
I think it's Grandier.
Grandier.
I'm going to go with the liquor on this one. Grandier.
So when we last left Urbain, the conspiratorial cabal of enemies made up of people he'd pissed off throughout his time as parish priest of Ludon were doing their damnedest to bring charges of witchcraft against the parson.
Man, he got so many of these creepazoids fucking mad. They're all creepazoids. When you look at all of the different, the coterie of different type of French cross psychopath that he made upset.
Yeah, creepazoids indeed. I don't stand them.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well, wait a second. Are you a 16-year-old girl with baby bangs?
Yeef. I heard yeef is another one they're saying.
Yeef. Yeef sounds like when I accidentally see your car crash. That's the sound I make.
You can use it then.
But as Huxley points out, it's important at this juncture to get a sense of exactly what the legal statutes behind witchcraft in the early 17th century actually were, at least in a broad European sense. Back then, a witch was legally defined in England as, quote, a person who hath conference with the devil to consult with him or to do some act.
So you're a witch either if you kill a priest in the name of Satan or if you order a pizza in the name of Satan.
Interesting. Anything, any relationship at all?
A conference with the devil.
Just a conference. So even if you did like a Skype conversation.
Oh, Castle Man. Okay. Wow. Wow.
But before 1604, that person could only be executed for being a witch if they'd been using witchcraft for the purposes of physically harming another person. Mm. But after the Witchcraft Act of 1604, anyone who invoked evil spirits or communed with familiar spirits, such as imps, demons, or fairies, were required to be executed, and much of Europe followed suit, at least legally.
I think it's interesting that they had to come up with, like, the legal basis.
Yeah,
I know.
For getting them. That all of this bullshit, all of this, like, going after essentially the coolest, grooviest, smartest, most modern people of the era and burning them to death, like, you still had to, like, find them guilty in a court of law.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a process here.
Yeah.
It's not just totally insane. It's not just people rationalizing their completely batshit crazy ideas. It's legal. This is a fun time for politics, though. The Witchcraft Act.
You disgust me.
That is very fun.
All of this politics is sports. Is this where the shit came from?
But, of course, witch hunting was nothing new when Urbain Grandier was accused in 1634. It had partly been kept alive by the publication of a book that had been written almost 150 years before, the Malleus Maleficarum, mm-hmm. a.k.a. the Hammer of Witches.
Fucking great fucking slog rock album title, but it's not as metal, because this was used to kill a lot of fucking chicks with their tits out and guys that got a bunch of people mad because they were being too funny.
Did people know they were being so cool? Like, when it comes to, like, Hammer of Witches, like, did they know that could be a Hot Topic shirt in 500 years? Like, did they realize that they were the true goths of our civilization?
I think that packaging was a part of it. They understood that the message was being like, it has to be scary. The Malleus Maleficarum was thick-ass book, too. Mm. Like, you could not only get a punishment for a witch out of it, but you could also just fucking hit her in the uterus with it.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe it was covered in human skin.
Ooh, no, it was not bound in human flesh. No, because
no,
that
it's not a
made
book
it
of shadows.
All right.
Now, as we've mentioned before, the Malleus Maleficarum was a kind of guidebook for hunting, prosecuting, and executing witches. Although it was not an official church document, it was still seen as credible by many, partly because it was written by a Catholic clergyman, even though the church had, quote-unquote, officially discredited it.
Mm.
Yeah, like they officially discredit sucking little boys' penises, but the habit keeps up.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? But the Pope kisses people's feet. Yeah. I saw him do that.
I watch him lick between them. All the toes. It's like, being like, how old are you? 16? Wonderful.
Oh, my goodness.
Until the late 17th century, inquisitors and magistrates were still inspecting people for superfluous nipples, or, as they called them, little teats.
That's what they called me in day camp when they pushed me down and took the towel off me and made fun of my penis.
Yeah, little teats. That's kind of cute. It's like Land Before Time.
Yeah.
But if no one was a dinosaur and instead they were boobs.
Well, the little teats would be used by the witch to suckle his or her familiar, usually like a cat or a toad. And if the person were to be found with one of these little teats, then bam, you got a witch. And that person could wind up dead on the stake.
Marcus, all right.
Yeah.
You love Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You're eternally sexually attracted to Carolina.
Oh, yeah, we're bound.
But I know you don't like frogs.
Hate them.
But if she did have a couple of little teats and frogs were hanging off of her sides, would you still make love to her?
At that moment?
And they're all going,
hey, Marcus, I have some of the side milk, Marcos.
Would you have problems with that? Or?
Well, if the frogs were permanently attached to the teats, then we'd find a way around it. But if I would politely ask to remove the frogs.
Well, they're talking frogs, it sounds like. So you can ask them, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a fucking horrible nightmare. Thanks for that.
Hold on here. Are these little teats... These are separate than the actual teats.
Yeah, they're separate. Well, I mean, they're
superfluous nipples.
Yeah, superfluous nipples. Yeah, I think it's somewhere around 9% of the population has superfluous nipples. Some people have like 4 or 5 just kind of all over their bodies.
So back then you were charged with witchcraft, and in modern time you just get to go on the Howard Stern show.
Oh, yeah. I remember, was there a guy called like Puppy Man or something like that who had a bunch of extra nipples?
There was something like that.
But the teats and all that, that's just the wacky pregame stuff.
Mm.
The real injustices came in the trials. Part of the Malleus Maleficarum states that the testimony of any witness whatsoever could be admitted as evidence, no matter how outlandish or ridiculous. That meant that gossip, hearsay, and dreams could be taken as fact in a court of law.
Do you think that this was true because... The idea of accusing somebody as a witch or calling them a witch is so intense in the first place that being like, if we've already started this witch proceedings, everything's fair game because it's so difficult to get the ball rolling.
Well, I think it's that they're talking about something that is inherently supernatural. So if you're talking about something that's supernatural, then it only follows that the evidence that would be put forth would also be supernatural.
You know, they didn't have a lot of open mics back then. I can see 13-year-old boys just wanting to be funny, looking for a crowd. And they're like, what's the best way to get this crowd? This courtroom is stacked with people. I got a great witch bit that I want to run. See if it's a good 5 minutes and maybe I can get this woman killed as well.
You're not that far off. It'd be like if Casper was trying to accuse Slender Man of molesting him. All the evidence would be disgusting, but it would also be fake.
I forgot that edited cartoon, the Casper cartoon where he has sex with Slender Man.
Casper, do you want to come down to my house and watch the football game?
Well, I don't know, Slender Man. My dad says you're bad to hang around with.
No way. You can meet one of my proxies. I certainly don't. Fuck them.
Be careful, Casper. Be careful.
But the part that was specifically important to the case of Urbain Grandier was the decree that a witness could even be a demon, speaking through the person that the demon possessed. In effect, one could have the devil himself testifying by proxy in one's trial.
Now, do they swear on the Bible, or do they have some sort of satanic book? How do you swear in the devil?
Now, this creates quite the paradox, considering how Christian doctrine names Satan as the father of lies. Mm. But this concept was central to the prosecution of Grandier. In this case, every morsel that came from the mouths of nuns during exorcisms was twisted and interpreted to always name Grandier as the one who would put these poor nuns through the demonic paces. But the thing was, most of the clergy and most people of the court, while they did believe in witchcraft, did not necessarily believe in witch hunting. And lawyers especially hated witchcraft cases.
Because they were hard to stick. You couldn't convict all the time. And at the time, also, the Catholic Church was starting to look like not good for them to be burning people. So they were trying to shift into a new, nicer, softer side of the Catholic Church at this time period. But, you know.
It got a bad look, the screaming women crying as they burn alive in the town square. All of a sudden, they were like, maybe we need to change the channel. Yeah. We need to switch up the programming a little bit. Maybe get an American Ninja Warrior on or something. But if you're a prosecutor, you know, they always want to have someone on the stand that is reliable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the devil. I mean, come on. I would rather have Michael Cohen on my prosecution squad than having the devil.
That is, you're talking about the Christian slant version of the devil, where he is the prince of lies, or actually he's the only one who could tell the truth. But unfortunately, the devil, a lot of times, if you call him upon a witness on a crime or in the middle of a trial, it will be just be me in a devil Halloween costume going,
three of the things I say will be lies. One of the things I say will be true. But all of them are jokes.
Whoa!
See, most educated people at the time, when it came to Grandier, didn't believe that he was the commander of a legion of demons that was out to abuse the good sisters of Loudon just because he got a kick out of it.
Mm.
But France was an absolute monarchy, and King Louis XIII and the Queen were very much believers in burning the witch.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as the upper echelons of the clergy went, they were split. The Bishop of Bordeaux, the one who liked to fuck just as much as Grandier, he was on the side of innocence.
Mm.
While the Bishop of Poitiers, who was of a decidedly more conservative bent, thought Grandier was a sorcerer.
Oh.
See, Bordeaux was coming inside of people having sex with them. But Poitiers, he was coming watching people burn. Like, I think they get the same shit. Adam.
Yeah.
These puritanical people, they seem to have much more of a bloodlust.
They have a lot more of a bloodlust.
Okay.
Because they're not fucking. Yeah.
I guess not.
The Bishop of Poitiers was actually a believer in what Huxley called the Sorcerer's Mafia, wherein every class of society in every town and village held hidden witches and wizards who were all working together for Satan's cause.
Hey, hey, Don. Welcome to the meeting of the Sorcerer's Mafia. You all know me. Tommy Ayanut Ayakoko. This is my friend Johnny Crusta Alligator Grand Genie. Yeah, this is a hacky bit, but I'll tell you what, it's the bit we're forced to live in.
I like it. I could see the sorcerer mafia going against the real mafia. Who would win? Who knows? Oh, that's tough to say.
I think the sorcerers win.
Could be. I mean, if anything that they do is actually real, guns are real.
Yeah, guns.
And we know the mafia has those. Yeah.
Mafia guys sit around in clubs eating pastries and, like, stare at trucks. You know, yeah, what I mean? That's a lot of what normal mafia guys do. I think sorcerer mafias, I mean, I guess they do the same thing, but they do it in, like, bigger hats.
Yeah, that's true.
I did also think that, you know, the whole of the Harry Potter problem could have been solved with a sniper rifle.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah.
Jeez. On either side.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking wipe out Harry Potter. Harry Potter was the fucking problem.
No, Harry Potter
I was actually more thinking wipe out Voldemort. You shoot
all
Voldemort
right
with a...
Yeah, you're
right.
Supposed to kill Voldemort. Doesn't he not have a nose? He has no nose.
He has no nose.
That's
no,
weird.
You just, yeah, you just send Harry Potter to train with a sniper rifle for a while, and then he just fucking cuts him down from about 200 yards away.
That would be fucking sweet, and it's like the scene from fucking JFK from Oliver Stone, where it's just him just like sweating in the book depository, you know, like as they're spending 6 months in Cuba at Wizard Assassination School. That's fucking sweet.
Yeah, all right.
But back in Loudon, some were beginning to push back on the idea that Grandier was guilty. The chief magistrate, Guillaume de Cerisay, had further investigated the case after the enema incident and found that the nuns were not in fact possessed, but were only suffering from delusions made worse by the public exorcisms.
I have come to believe, as the chief magistrate, that some of the forcible liquids that they put inside the buttocks of some of these poor sweet nuns has, in fact, in some way, made the problem worse.
I think it would.
They're dripping everywhere. There's so much nun drip, every all of them up cassette.
Intriguing. Kind of a French Charles Ng there. I like it. I like it very much. The enema, of course. Uh-huh. Powerful enema. Powerful.
Give this man an enema. There is Dracula dead loving.
I remember that.
So, the chief magistrate ordered exorcist Mignon and Barret to stop immediately. But the Bishop of Poitiers stepped in and wrote a letter that the exorcisms must continue.
Mm.
But as a compromise, the exorcisms would no longer be public, at least temporarily.
Aww.
That's all right. That's okay.
That's not to say, though, that Mignon calmed down at all. He still spent his days reading his flock chapters from a report that had been written concerning the Father Galfridi case, trying to convince everyone that Grandier was just as bad, if not worse.
I mean, do you want these? If you're one of these nuns, a.k.a. witches, is being in public better? At least you get the stage time.
No,
you get a little. You get a little
being
press.
In public is terrible.
That was worse. Although, I mean, don't you have to be slightly more controlled when you're doing the exorcism when there's eyes on you?
No,
yeah, actually, I feel the opposite.
Yeah,
I
really?
I think the eyeballs turned up the performance because now you're locked in, right? Mm. You've already accused Grandier of being Grand Wizard that is infecting you all with his sweet, supple dream cock. Right, and he's fucking you all in your dreams. You've already said all this shit. So now you're kind of like what we've seen in like in cults and that kind of shit. You now kind of made a public promise
right.
that we are possessed. We are going to sit here. We're going to eat each other's pussies. We're going to roll around here and freak out and jerk off all these candles. And the eyeballs kind of what keeps up your half of the argument. Because I imagine when you are in a closed room, getting fucking fingers shoved down your throat, getting fucking whipped, getting covered in water, all of the weird shit that they would do during those exorcisms, that it's hard to keep up the ruse.
Mm-hmm. All right, there it is. That's why everyone should always end every sentence with, and that's a promise. I love it.
That's good. Good. Never be caught in a lie that way.
Never.
That's for certain.
Well, eventually, they actually started letting some of the lesser priests try their hands at exorcism, just to see what would happen. But when Philippe Trinquant's brother tried it out, his Latin was so bad that people started laughing, so he just stopped in the middle of the exorcism and left the room.
Abbe Thetanith and Miraculum Smalaculum. Accio.
Boo. Hey, learn the language.
You're seriously just going to make fun of me for trying? I'll tell you what, anytime I'll come to your house and I'll make fun of you when you're trying something new.
Is this easy? Boo.
I will take my talents to South Beach.
Whoa. Have fun. Sounds like when Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, used to speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
It's very adorable. He tried.
Como se dice.
He tried. Very cute.
Fly from your grave. Fly from your grave.
Well, eventually, things started to wind down in Loudon. More officials came and declared it to be nothing more than mass hysteria, and when a doctor known only as the Metropolitan showed up to inspect the scene, the nuns acted meek as lambs.
Weird. Just the Metropolitan? What is he, an owner of a vape store?
Cool. Maybe he's like that dude from Transmat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's the name of that guy again? Spider?
Spider. What do you mean? He's like a future journalist?
I don't know. I love
that. Up until that point, I mean, they were seriously, they were going nutso bananas, right? These guys were really kind of squirming all over each other. But then as the heat started coming off, they said that they would straight up, they would get bored and sad.
Yeah.
Like as soon as they started like hanging out, being like, I guess we're not crazy lesbians anymore. Yeah, what a phase. It was like they all spent a year at Oberlin.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sophomore year, they come out of the haze.
Yeah, that's sad. That's unfortunate. So they were just not they weren't able to perform anymore.
No, and they were losing business, too.
Oh.
Because they were just under this extreme stress all the time. They started having mental breakdowns in the middle of classes. They started just laughing uncontrollably. And they were having screaming, foul-mouthed fights with each other in the halls.
So the nuns were not having fun.
The nuns were having a terrible time.
Okay.
And so, because the nuns were so erratic, parents started pulling their kids from the school, and pretty soon, and pretty soon, the nuns were mentally frazzled and totally broke, and even more miserable than they were when everyone first started showing up.
Can you imagine that? If you brought your kids to like a fancy private school, but then all the teachers started fucking each other publicly.
Yeah, I would have to. I guess you got to take the kids out.
I don't think the nuns were fucking each other publicly. You're just bringing the devils into it. They never fucked each other publicly.
I don't know, buddy. The way it sounds like it, because Huxley
does paint it a little bit more conservatively, because he said that what, but I think that there's a hint there when he said at the very beginning what went on was no different than was actually already going on in a lot of the writings at the time, in terms of like what happened with the Marquis de Sade and what happened with that confessions book where the woman was like shitting in the bucket and the guy was like tasting it and shit. Where it's like, so I think they were, there was some of it. There was rubbins.
There could have been rubbins, but I don't think they were like, you know, going down in the hallways.
Oh,
I don't
know.
Right. Well, could have been rubbins. I'm sure we do have some Henry Zebrowski fantasy going on here as well.
Yeah.
It's Easter.
It's Easter. It's a holiday made of fantasy.
Well, Grandier's enemies were at a loss as well, because their plan was threatening to fizzle out completely. But that all changed when an agent of Cardinal Richelieu, who also happened to be a relative of Sister Jeanne d'Angers, named Jean de Labardemont, came visiting on government business. Now, as we said last episode, Cardinal Richelieu was one of the most powerful people in France, and he was certainly the most powerful clergyman in the country, and Labardemont was the cardinal's creature. And judging and burning witches was kind of Labardemont's thing, as he had judged and burned several dozens of witches by the time Urbain Grandier was accused.
Now, what makes, obviously all of this is fantasy world, right? What makes you the most powerful of the bishops? Do you just smell the most of wine? Like, what? How does this work?
He has the king's ear.
He has the king's ear. Yeah. Now, in his pocket, or where is the ear?
I mean, he's essentially second in command of France at this point, because church and state are so powerfully intertwined.
So he's more of a politician than a religious man.
Very much so, more of a politician. Okay. Absolutely.
All of these guys were. A lot of it, there are obviously true believers in the mix, but a lot of these guys are just whoever gets closest to the circle right around the king, but that circle also changes quick. Mm-hmm. Like, if you watch The Favorite, all that kind of
which is great,
where it's like they legitimately, like, if you don't do what he likes, or if he just decides that you're not gay enough to be fun, he kicks you out.
Kicks you out. The Favorite. Great movie, The Favorite.
Wonderful movie.
Really liked it.
Well, Grandier's enemies just needed some extra oomph to make all of this stick.
Mm.
And it was Mémin de Silly who came up with the scheme.
How about we take all of its hats and we put the brims on the other side?
Oh.
And then we get some rubber chickens and we put them in his bed.
That is why we keep you around, Mr. Silly.
Look how big my couch is. I got roller skates on.
This is ridiculous. God, he is fun.
Is that Gallagher?
So Grandier's enemies, led by Mémin de Silly, took a meeting with Labardemont and told him that Grandier was not just a sorcerer who had rebelled against God and bewitched a convent of nuns, but had also written a violent and obscene lampoon on Cardinal Richelieu 6 years earlier under the title Letter from the Cobbler of Loudon.
Whoa!
Yeah, dude. It was all about how the cardinal used to fart in his pants and how he had like a big butt and he had a stupid head. It was an Onion article.
Oh my God. Yeah. Something you could see on Clickhole. Or back before all of those things happened, what Larry Flint used to do with Jerry Falwell when he accused him of having sex with his mother in an outhouse, and then Jerry Falwell sued him.
Yeah, that's all it was. And Grandier, he didn't write this lampoon, but since he and the lady cobbler after whom the letter was named used to fuck, it wasn't unreasonable to think that Grandier might have written it. And that was good enough for Labardemont.
What? But, I mean, it doesn't even compare. We're talking one time here. They say he has possessed an entire convent full of nuns. He's making them orgasm and bleed. And then the other argument is he wrote a one-pager was kind of funny.
Yeah,
he wrote a humorous little script.
It used to be very dangerous to be funny.
Yeah.
What?
They did not like it when you made fun of the people in power. It got them very, very upset. If you look at, it's this weird aristocratic feel, like it's this thought process of no one can make me look stupid.
Yeah, they actually hanged a man who just printed a copy of Letter from the Cobbler of Loudon.
Well, how did any of our relatives survive this?
That's just
a nightmare.
You just go like, you'd have to do like, hey, that cardinal's got a really big butt. Like, you have to learn how to throw your voice to the other room, or you become an official, like, jester of the court. You have to become pro. or right. not at all.
But I think the jesters were more just made fun of, weren't they? They would throw tomatoes at the jester and stuff like that.
Yeah, so on and so forth.
Okay.
You're talking about the proud lineage of the comedian.
I know. I know.
So, Laubardemont reported what he'd heard to the cardinal upon his return to court, and the cardinal brought up the entire sordid affair at the next meeting of the Council of State, bringing it directly to the attention of King Louis XIII. And without much prompting, the king ordered Laubardemont to return to Loudun himself to investigate the possession in depth, examine the accusations, and if necessary, preside over the trial and pass sentence.
Whoa. You do it. You do it, all right? Oh, so it's a problem? You do it. I have to put on a play where I dress as a lady.
You know, we could also let women into the theater. We could let women on stage and perform. You ever think
disgusting.
About that?
Disgusting. Women are filled with eggs. Ooh, what are they, chickens?
My sisters are
give
great.
Me a man. Give me a man. I like a man with a his eggs are lizards.
Okay, well, my sister's a very talented actress. She would love to.
Disgusting. Look at the sacks hanging off of her front.
Well, those are breasts, but she's quite pretty, actually.
Well, it was the cardinal who told Laubardemont that he better fucking make it necessary to preside over a trial and pass a sentence, because the cardinal had a few different reasons for pushing this agenda.
Fixes in.
One, this was a good opportunity for the cardinal to prove just how amazingly Catholic he was capable of being, as a proposed alliance with the Protestant Swedes was throwing that belief into question. And what's more Catholic than burning a fucking witch?
Nothing. Other than one big scandal thing.
That one big scandal.
That one big scandal.
Apparently the most Catholic thing you do is to blow a boy, and but the semen shows up in another priest's mouth.
I don't know. That is disgusting. Okay.
But perhaps more importantly, if it could be proved without a doubt, at least in the hearts and minds of the people, that the devil was indeed invading France via Loudun, then the cardinal could revive the Inquisition in France, giving himself almost unlimited power.
Ooh.
Now, Urbain Grandier's friends, because he did still have a few friends left, just not any powerful ones. They tried to warn him as to what was coming.
They tried, man. They were like, get out of town.
Leave.
All you have to do is leave.
Yeah, why didn't you just dip out?
Stubbornness.
But come on, just France is beautiful.
What, no, he had a secret wife. You have any idea how much money a wedding costs? I'm just a two. He had to throw his own little wedding. You can't do all that. Obviously, it's private. But he couldn't leave his fake wife. And, I mean, he had all these other widows he had to fill.
Just go. Leave.
Well, he was just stubborn. Because he's like, I didn't do shit. They're not going to make me leave. They can't make me do anything. They can't make me do anything I don't want to do.
Yikes.
And he still hadn't been officially charged with anything. I mean, he was still parish priest of Loudun. He didn't think he had anything to worry about, because after all, he'd been dealing with this bullshit for almost a year straight, and nothing had happened yet.
Right.
If you had looked up Oliver Reed drunk on late night shows, you'd see how difficult it would have been to remove Grandier from a place.
Right.
Where it's like, Oliver Reed, he was 250 pounds of, like, thick, stocky Englishman, but when you added about 10 pounds of booze inside of him, he became an immovable object. And you can see him swinging back and forth, those big beer arms.
I'm sure he did great on the Johnny Carson show, though. That's I miss.
I dare you to make me. It's not in my motivation to leave this set. Let me see the script.
I miss drunk actors and drunk that used to late night. Ed McMahon was literally hammered every single night.
He went,
and everybody knew it.
But he just sat there and giggled.
But that's a perfect job. Ed McMahon figured it all out. Pat Sajak and Vanna White used to just go get hammered.
True.
I mean, it was so much more fun back then.
Yep.
Well, as soon as Laubardemont returned to Loudun, Grandier found out just how wrong he was.
Uh-oh.
Laubardemont immediately ordered Grandier's arrest, and Urbain was taken into custody while he was on his way to preach a sermon at his own church.
Now, Daniel! How dare you I have a show tonight? And I will not be... I will not be bodily removed. I was having a delicious, succulent Chinese meal.
I will not be removed.
Is John F. Kennedy having a Chinese meal? What's going on?
Grandier's entire library was searched from top to bottom, and while it was disappointing to find no concrete pacts with the devil or magical grimoires, they did find a copy of the letter from the cobbler of Loudon.
Oh my, and they found OJ's glove as well. This is planted evidence if I've ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm. I found, it's just crack cocaine. Incredible.
And it was enough to sink Grandier. So after Grandier was arrested, it was decided that there was no prison strong enough in Loudon to house such a powerful sorcerer. So Canon Mignon offered up the attic of his house for use as the magician's prison.
That's literally awesome. It's like X-Men when they had to put Magneto in the non-steel or whatever
the plastic prison.
Yeah.
Well, they devil-proofed it, as they called it, by bricking up the windows and fitting the door with a new lock and heavy bolts. Then they closed the chimney with an iron grating, lest Grandier make use of the old witch's trick and disappear up the flue.
This is what you guys had to do with me back in the day when you used to put me in free speech jail.
Yeah,
there's
well,
no free speech jail strong enough to hold me.
Free speech jail is still open for business and looking for clients, my friend. We've privatized it, as a matter of fact.
I will not be removed. I just had a succulent Chinese meal.
So they believe the devil is this all-powerful being, but they also think a door lock will be able to stop him from entering.
If it's a good one.
If it's a good one. Okay, master lock, maybe.
And once the cell was fully constructed, Grandier was thrown inside with nothing more than a pile of hay on which to sleep, and that would be his home for the last year of his life.
Mm.
But how flattering is that?
What do you mean?
But they think you're so powerful, they gotta put all of this shit in his own house. That's gotta be like, huh, wow, they really believe in me.
I guess so. I would also just be like, guys, not that powerful.
No.
I'm actually not that strong.
Listen, I have other material. I have other material, not just the stuff about the cardinal. What about airplane food? Have you heard of this thing? It's all right, first of all, it's giant birds you can go inside. No, listen. And the food, it's just hard to describe. It's that the bathrooms are small. A bathroom is a thing that people can, in the future, go privately and go to the bath. I don't know how.
Burn him! Honestly, we were on Delta. Not bad food.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah. Great. You been on these new planes where they got windows in the bathroom yet?
No.
It's fantastic.
Really?
You feel like you're pissing off the edge of the world.
I don't know if
horrifying.
I need
that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I need to be looking at birds staring at me while I take a disgusting dump on an airplane.
It's just the fucking creature from the There's Something on the Wing from Twilight Zone. Like you see it out there. He's watching you piss, and he slowly starts jerking off.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, once Grandier was safely locked away, La Bardemont turned his attention to Sister Jen and the other 16 nuns. The only problem was that after 6 months of no real attention, the sisters had pretty much returned to normal.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, to get them going again, Canon Mignon restarted the public exorcisms on the authority of La Bardemont. Every single day, Mignon took the nuns in batches and carted them around to various churches in Loudon where audiences were waiting. Loudon became an unofficial tourist attraction for the people of France. Because thousands of people started flocking from all over the country to see these exorcisms. They hear about it through word of mouth.
Right.
There were pamphlets being distributed all across the country as far as what was going on. And the nuns continued to bare their legs for the people.
Oh, yeah. Just screaming shit. Just being like, he entered me. I prostituted myself for the devil. Woo!
I think I've seen this exact show on TLC. The Learning Channel.
Yeah.
It's a reality show network.
Yeah,
why'd you look at me like I had 8 heads?
Because I didn't know what the show was.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know what show you're referring to.
Okay,
I don't know what show you're referencing.
I'm not... Okay, well, isn't this fun when I get to explain my idea? Isn't this the fun part of the show? No, because TLC is ridiculously stupid reality television programming, and for all intents and purposes, this is a reality television show for the French, and now that I'm explaining it, everyone, this has ruined everything.
There's nothing stupid about 16 just pert nuns grinding themselves in a big cart.
No, I understand. I'm just saying it's a reality television program. It's one of the first that ever existed, perhaps.
Well, the point of these exorcisms was not to drive the devil from these poor women. The point was to prove the guilt of Urbain Grandier by getting the devil himself to admit that Grandier was evil. Now, as I said earlier, there is a paradox at work here, but Grandier's enemies got around it by saying that when the devil is constrained by a priest of the Roman Catholic Church, he has to tell the truth.
That's legal!
Is that right? Really?
No choice.
No choice.
No choice whatsoever.
Because he's surrounded by the power of a chunky priest. Is that right? I've met a lot of priests in my life.
Yeah, you'll do exactly what I say, you stinky devil. Yeah. You'll laugh at me before when I was trying to get Latin, but now I'll see him laugh. Make it right. Now tell me, how handsome am I, devil?
You are like a grape if he had a mustache.
God damn the honesty.
Well, that was the truth. Turns out the devil was telling the truth.
So, the exorcist started inducing the demoniacs, as Huxley called the nuns.
Oh, that's fun.
Isn't it fun?
Oh my God, I wish our fans were called the demoniacs. Oh, that's so fun.
Well, he started inducing them into giving the exorcists exactly what they wanted. Soon, a nun was confessing through the mouth of a devil that Grandier had, quote-unquote, taken her on the Sabbath and had made her a princess at the devil's court.
I have prostituted myself to be a princess at the devil's court. And they also, one other term I liked is he said, they made of them an obscene altar at wish for him to worship.
Interesting. Sounds like the documentary about Courtney Love, you know?
Which documentary about Courtney Love?
I don't know, the one where she looks all crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, you mean the documentary that is her life?
Yeah.
Live from your grave.
While this may all sound ridiculous, it was actually necessary to up the ante. Before this admission about the Sabbath and all that, Grandier was just a mere sorcerer. But now, Grandier was a high priest, fully and completely in league with the devil.
Wow.
He was more of a buddy of the devil than a servant of the devil.
He's a buddy of the devil.
He's a friend of the devil.
But then there was the question of the teats.
I've been wanting to ask the questions about the teats.
Well, it was confirmed that Grandier had no superfluous teats.
Sure. You can tell that easily.
Yeah. We could all have figured that out.
Yeah. While that was confirmed, sometimes in place of the teats, the devil will bestow upon his servants what is known as the devil's mark.
The devil's mark.
These spots, used to seal the servant's obedience to the devil, were supposedly impervious to pain. According to Sister Jeanne, Grandier had no less than 5.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of spots.
1 on his shoulder, 2 on the butt cheeks near his butthole.
Inside of the cheeks.
Yeah, right, ma'am, I just have a question here from the jury. How'd you know that, ma'am? How do you know that about the inside of the butt cheeks there, ma'am?
We did this thing called the flick test. Just see if he jumped every single time I'd flick it.
Oh, yeah. Yuck.
Aldous Huxley called it his fundament.
Alright, come on.
That's his taint. That's Huxley word for taint.
Wow.
Fundament.
Fundament?
Fundament.
Alright, Mr. Huxley.
And he had a devil's mark on each testicle.
In the back of it, too. You're literally talking about the entire grundle. Was where the devil had his playground, which it still resides there today.
Absolutely it does. Also, if he doesn't get tried or charged as a sorcerer, he's got to go to the doctor. This could be testicular cancer. It sounds very dangerous.
Well, he's about to get checked, Kissel, that no one will ever forget.
Yeah. Oh. Now, of course, all this had to be checked out, so the apothecary and several doctors stripped, shaved, and blindfolded Grandier before systematically pricking him to the bone with a long, sharp probe to see where the spot didn't feel pain actually was.
Huh. See, think about this, all right? Yeah, I thought at first, because it said you're supposed to prick the spot and see if they experience it. It's either bleed or have any sort of reaction, right? So in my mind, I always thought it was like a little pin. I go, blink, blink. And because it's like, if you stick me with a pin right next to my butthole, I'll go at least have like a, oh, like I'll have like some sort of reaction, like, hey now, or like a, like I'll say a yeast. Yeah. I'll say something like that. But they used a long, thin needle that they would go all the way through the meat to his skeleton. Ooh. And you're talking about under the balls, too.
Well, they reportedly found only two devil's marks.
Mm.
But two is good enough.
Two is good enough?
Mm-hmm.
But he was accused of five.
Yep. Two is good enough.
Oh, come on.
One would have been good enough.
Yeah, that's just a mole.
And if they,
and it,
oh,
it also was a lie. It also was a fucking lie. Because he definitely probably screamed when you put the shit inside of him.
Yeah. And also, sometimes moles would be used as devil's marks. They're like, ah, that mole looks weird. It's probably a devil's mark.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And what was more, these devil's marks were admissible in court, according to what was said in the Malleus Maleficarum.
Really?
Even if the Maleficarum was not strictly a legal document. And the legality here was really at the heart of these proceedings. According to church law, everything about this was being done wrong.
Oh, really? So even by crazy church law standards, they're messing this up.
Yeah, yeah. Exorcisms are supposed to be in private at all times. Exorcisms are not supposed to be public, and demons were never meant to even be listened to. You're not supposed to... Remember,
The demon will lie. Remember, when you go in there, the demon shall lie to you.
You're not supposed to take a demon as a witness in a court case.
But what if the demon says really nice things about you?
Do not listen to the demon. It's just flattery.
Yeah, well, you sound like an asshole. The demon sounds very nice.
He's got a nice laugh. That's what I like about him. He also knows how to hold down a steady job.
Thank you.
You lie. I am a bum.
But Richelieu had a goal, and Laubardemont had to carry that goal out by whatever means necessary.
Mm.
And with the devil's mark, Laubardemont was able to officially announce that science had backed his claims. And Urbain Grandier could officially stand trial as a witch.
All right!
Oh,
my
man,
God.
It is fucked.
This is horrible. So this whole time he's locked up in like Rapunzel up there in the windowless room.
Yep.
And he doesn't realize any of this is happening.
No.
Or is he like, they're just going to let me out at some point, right?
No.
Somewhere out there.
Is he singing that as all the nuns are all singing it too? Just gushing everywhere, man.
Oh.
He's biding his time.
Okay.
That's what he's doing. He's thinking like, well, I just got to be patient. This is a trial. It's a test. Once I get my day in court, man, I'm gonna set all this straight. So I just gotta be patient. I just gotta wait. And he's not really privy to everything that's going on, but he thinks he's still fine.
Okay.
But that's not to say there wasn't any physical evidence when it came to this trial. The nuns had actually begun to vomit up strange objects during exorcisms, and these strange objects were seen as packs, or physical manifestations of deals with the devil. Among these packs, either vomited up or mysteriously found in the nuns' rooms, were a piece of paper stained with 3 drops of blood and containing 8 orange seeds, a bundle of 5 straws, and a package that contained cinders, worms, hair, and nail clippings.
And all of these can be used for various spells. That's the idea of this, is all these is like it's weird material of witches. But we also don't know who's planting these things or not. We don't know whether or not it's the scientists. Because remember, the scientists, quote unquote, the guys that are like the apothecaries, they're the ones doing all of the like the experts, like medical witness shit.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones putting things down the throats of fucking witches and then bumping it back out.
But what these women were throwing up was nothing compared to what Sister Jen supposedly threw up.
Oh, I thought you were going to say what she shat out. Sister Jen went another direction with it.
I do a fun kind of upside down throw up.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Day Silly just dies laughing. Yeah. Like in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when the weasel dies.
Well, always the most inventive of the sisters, Sister Jen once vomited up a pact that, according to the devil possessing her, contained a piece of the heart of a child sacrificed 2 years earlier, the ashes of a consecrated wafer, and a whole load of Grandier's cum.
Wow. Now, how do we know it's Grandier's?
Because the devil said so.
So, yep. I mean, no matter what, it's obviously not his, but they just, she got it worse, I think, than the sticks.
Well, it
the girl with
actual
the
cum. It was just.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, there wasn't any actual cum. It was probably just like a piece of meat and like some other weird shit that she'd swallowed.
Says Marcus. Well,
Yeah,
it, she could have found some cum somewhere. It's, you know, it's the 1600s.
I mean, it still was made back then.
Yeah,
it was. I know that for a fact.
I don't think cum like changed color or anything with the time periods, did it? Like, do you think that cum was different, Matt?
I think cum was has always been the same.
I think it's been the exact same.
Wow.
Tale as old as cum. We know it.
But part of the reason why the ladies were doing so much vomiting was because they were being stuffed with, quote-unquote, medications.
Mm.
The worst of which being the antimony pill. These pills, which were essentially just pieces of smoothed metal, aggravated the mucous membranes on their way down and were used to purge the stomach and the bowels of the person swallowing them.
Mm-mm.
Commonly known as perpetual pills, they were afterward fished out of the chamber pot, no matter what end they came out of.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And were reused again and again, often passed down as family heirlooms.
They're the corn of medication? How do you, so it just doesn't dissolve in the body? What is happening
it's
here?
It's metal. It's just a piece of metal that they would swallow and then throw up or shit out. And then they'd reach the chamber pot, they'd take it, they'd rinse it out, and it's like, okay, we'll just put it back with the others. Nice. And then it would go from generation to generation, like, this is grandfather. Father's perpetual pill.
Oh, thank you so much.
You see, this one's nice because we got it in Playa del Carmen. Like it says it here on the side.
Wow. Rough day.
Can you imagine that, getting grandpa's perpetual pill?
And I like, guess.
You're going to want to save this. I remember our honeymoon night. I had four of them in me.
Wow. Someone's got to dig them out there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you know what?
What?
They had fun, too.
Why? who is digging the stuff out?
No, not with digging the stuff out. Just in general. Just the exorcist and the priest. They had fun.
Okay.
In one exorcism, the devil possessing a nun, he called Larbatama a cuck. And the clerk recorded it in the official minutes.
Unfortunately, I'm going to need to record that as evidence, but I will... I don't believe that one. That's the one thing that he's saying that is not true.
Well, actually, later, Larbatama, who was not there at the exorcism, he signed it without reading it, saying that everything contained in the official minutes was, to the best of his knowledge, true.
Lol, ruffle.
Yep, everyone had a good laugh.
Rolling 4chan on the floor.
Started then. That is
a- oh my, cuck.
But the really strange thing about all of this is that while Larbatama and God and Christ and the Virgin Mary and the priests and the monks and the other nuns, all these people were being blasphemed, and amazingly enough, no devil was brave enough to blaspheme the king or the cardinal.
Really?
Yeah, because they saw what happened to Grandier.
Yeah, dude. And if you come for the king, you better not miss.
Yeah. I heard that.
James Woods.
I have. I stand that. Always.
But that wasn't the only suspect thing about the language that the devils used. Mm-hmm. See, the church had four tests, and still has four tests, when it comes to seeing as to whether or not a possession case is genuine. You got the strength test, the levitation test, the clairvoyance test, and of course, the language test.
Also known as the carne quattro. What's a quattro?
That
carne
makes
quattro
sense.
Sounds fine.
The carne quattro, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as anyone who's seen a single possession movie knows, when a person is possessed, they're suddenly fluent in languages they've never heard, like when Reagan starts speaking Italian in The Exorcist.
Mm.
But in the case of the nuns, only the nuns who knew Latin were possessed by devils who spoke Latin. And even the ones who did know Latin didn't speak or understand it very well. On one occasion, a priest kept asking questions in Latin until he found one that the nun could answer correctly.
Great.
And the embarrassment of that one was only compounded when the whole thing got broken up by another nun coming into the room on her hands and knees, neighing like a horse.
Oh, no, that is not even, that's not necessarily part of the possession. She's just telling us, lunch is ready, girl. All right, come on.
Oh, my.
And then he just gets on her back and just like, all right, let's let's go to the commissary.
She got bit by the horse bug. That's fun. I want the horse demon.
Can you imagine that if you're trying to do something super serious and then a woman comes into the room on her hands and knees going,
I don't know, man.
I saw some HBO Real Sex documentary footage of the horsey play. They used to show that episode like every week.
It's burnt into my mind. That one and the clown erotica one where they're all sitting in the pies. Yeah.
Real weird. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when asked about the language discrepancy, the exorcist said that there were educated devils and uneducated devils in this world. Hmm. And it just so happened that the educated devils were drawn to the educated women.
And of course, educated devils, they tend to vote more Democrat. The uneducated devils tend to be a little bit more Republican. But I don't know. You know, it seems to be the trends.
It's crazy how much the spin machine has been working since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
The spin machine is just like, we just figured out really easily, like, you set up a set of laws, and then you just kind of jimmy-rig everything, so it just kind of fits towards those laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have to say, I'm probably in more agreement with the uneducated people, because it seems like the educated people are pulling off what seems to be total nonsense with these, what are we talking about here?
Possession?
Possessions. Exorcisms. The educated people are the ones doing exorcisms. Mm-hmm. The uneducated, I think they think that's dumb.
No, the uneducated were absolutely on the side of the possessions.
You need a crowd. Yeah. I don't know. You also need an audience, so I'm not sure.
Well, and furthermore, if the devils could not speak a certain language, such as Greek or Gaelic, because a couple of guys came in and tried fooling them, the reason why they couldn't speak those languages was because the pact that Grandier had signed with the devils forbade them from using that language.
Of course.
Are ye, ooh ye, a evil day?
It does seem like there's a lot of human rules put onto this supernatural situation. But
and that was also how they were able to skirt the levitation issue. Sister Jen said that the pact with Grandier expressly forbade any and all floating. They might as well just forget about it. Don't ask me about it.
It was illegal by demon law for them to float. There's no way they could break those laws. So, I mean, because then they would be criminals against the devil as demons, and then they have to go into devil court.
Oh my, I would assume that's worse.
Well, the thing is that everybody's a lawyer.
Oh.
That's funny, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
This is a good point for the Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell commercial. We could just kind of put that in there.
Rise from your grave. Rise from your grave.
Well, as far as the strength issue went, they brought in a Scottish physician named Mark Duncan to see just how strong the ladies were, because they were supposed to be superhumanly strong.
Okay.
But they soon found that Duncan had more than enough strength to just kind of hold them down with his hand. Well, the exorcist responded to this by inviting anyone who doubted the nun's strength to stick their fingers in the nun's mouth.
Oh.
Their reasoning was that if the nuns were not supernaturally strong, then the men had nothing to worry about. But if they were worried that the devil was going to bite them, then they would refuse. And since they refused to stick their fingers in these women's mouths, the exorcist took it as proof they have to be unnaturally strong.
It makes all the sense in nothing, in no world.
It does.
In no world does it make any sense, but okay.
But, and they will say a lot of times the nuns, because they would like be in character, right? Like, ha, 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 I am all the sucks in hell. And then you'd stick the fingers in their mouth, because the idea is that you're opening up their mouth to scream into their mouth at the devil, right? That was inside of them.
Mm.
But then one of them, they would always take and go like, ah, until one, there was one priest that would stick his fingers in, and they'd go like, ugh. All right, stop it. Because his hands were always dirty.
I'm sure they're freaking filthy. We're in the 15th century here?
17th.
17th century France? Oh, my God.
But this priest had hands that were filthy for 17th century France.
What in the world?
Well, concerning clairvoyance, meaning the knowledge of things that they could not have known without supernatural help, the exorcist took the profane, filthy things that the nuns said and did on a daily basis as proof of that. In the words of a one Father Tranquille, quote,
"In what school of Rex and Ethios have they learned to spew forth such blasphemies and obscenities?"
In other words, there was no way the nuns could have learned how to say fuck me without the help of the devils.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and the nuns were spending a lot of time saying, fuck me, fuck me,
yeah,
fuck me.
Fuck me, fuck me, fuck me.
Well, they're
yeah,
nuns.
Fucking, yeah, give me the mustache. I want to pull your dick out of my fucking ass. Dude, give me your mustache with it. Like, they were saying, like, fun stuff.
Well, they're lonely. They just want companionship. They've been in the nunnery, the convent, fucking for far too long.
Turn me upside down and make me fart, you dumb bitch. Like, saying, like, weird yeah. shit. Being like, blowing my asshole. Like, that's fun. That's fun.
But the thing was, at one point, the nuns did fight back. In July of 1634, months after all this had begun again, one of the nuns burst into tears and admitted that all of it had been a lie and that she had acted under the orders of Canon Mignon.
Ooh.
Oh, it's like a White House aide.
Yeah.
Even Sister Jean, who had started this whole goddamn mess, made a full plea during one of her exorcisms as the public watched. But it was far too late by this point for any of the nuns to be credible. The exorcist claimed that if any of the nuns said the whole thing had been one big lie, then it was actually just further proof that she'd been telling the truth before.
Flipping it.
Yeah.
Because Grandier, and by extension the devil, was speaking through her.
Okay.
Now, eventually, Sister Jean went to La Bardemont's parlor and told him herself that she'd made up everything and that Grandier was innocent. But of course, La Bardemont wasn't in this thing for justice, so he politely told her to fuck off.
Yeah, dude, by then it was too late. Everybody yeah. was too fucking horny for death.
I will say, though, technically not too late. At any point, they could have just stopped doing this. Grandier is still alive. Mm-hmm. They could just be like, all right, thank you for the new evidence has come to... Thank you, new evidence has come to light. We're going to let him go.
Yeah, and the trial hadn't even begun at this point. This was still all pre-trial stuff.
So I don't think it is too late.
It's not too late.
Okay.
But still, I mean, these guys had an agenda and they were going to carry it through.
Absolutely.
So Sister Jean walked out to the convent yard in the pouring rain, stripped down to her undergarments, and tried hanging herself from a tree in the garden, and was saved only when the other nuns came to her rescue. And of course, this suicide attempt was taken as even more proof that the devil had taken hold of Sister Jean.
Oh.
After that, though, Sister Jean started to lash out at the people of Loudun. Now, had this been about more than just the death of Urbain Grandier, this is the point of the witch hunt where dozens more people could have ended up dead. But thankfully, there was only one further casualty, and even then, it didn't end in death. Sister Jean accused Grandier's secret wife, Madeleine de Bru, of witchcraft. And while she was eventually freed, she ended up having to do what else but join a convent and disappeared into a nunnery forever.
Oh my goodness, the accusation sunk her.
Mm-hmm.
I also did get some response from people asking if nuns did as much scissoring as they thought they did in convents, and a lot of nuns, I guess they just kind of refused to answer.
Yeah, I don't think that they do, Henry.
Yeah.
I think that you have a very, I don't know, pornographic view of what a convent is.
That's the only view I have of it, because I've never seen inside of a real one, and I just don't know. You know, I'm uneducated.
I don't know. We used to have a couple of nuns at my Catholic school, Sister Susan Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very interesting. She ate a lot of snack foods during class and picked her nose and ate it. She really did that. Yeah. I don't even know if I should say her name.
Yeah.
She really did pick her nose and eat it.
Do you think she'll snap awake in her casket and she'll be like,
"Oh, she's still around."
Anyway. Well, Jean didn't just stop at Madeleine de Bru. She said that the men of Loudun were kissing the devil's rump on the Sabbath. The women were fornicating with incubi, and all over town, sorcerers were causing impotence in young men on their wedding nights.
Oh.
And it was Grandier who was ejaculating into the tiny air holes of the bricked-up window of his attic cell, and that his magic cum would fly all around town to reward the witches and warlocks of Loudun with his favor.
Hell yeah.
Like when you're walking down a street in New York City and you feel a drop of water hit your head, and then you look up and it's an AC unit, like on the fifth floor, but in this case, it's his cum.
It's his cum.
Yeah, there's just a guy just standing on top of the AC unit going like, "Hello, Mr. Gissel. Huge fan of the podcast.
Drop.
I just got Spider-Man."
In other words, Grandier was fucked.
Oh, my.
In fact, once his preliminary trial was over, his execution was seen as such a foregone conclusion that 30,000 people showed up in Loudun hoping to see Grandier burn. The only person who didn't think Grandier was fucked,
was Grandier.
Buddy, at some point he needs a friend to just be like, you know, things aren't looking great for you right now.
You are truly completely fucked. He's like, no, no, I have an incredible closer. Wait till they see this bit that I do about how, again, airplanes are amazing. If you could just even imagine what it's like. But the seats are so small. And the captain's so calm, even though he's flying through the air.
Isn't that wild? Successful French comedy continues.
Yeah, I mean, Grandier still thought that the whole thing had just been one big misunderstanding. And once he got his day in court, he'd straighten everything out.
That's the last, when it's all been a misunderstanding are your last words. This is a misunderstanding.
I am pretty certain that is going to be your last word.
This is all a misunderstanding.
You struggling against people going towards the chair. You know?
But on the day of the trial, after all the evidence was read and Grandier began making his grand speech in defense of the charges against him, he saw that the judges appointed to his case weren't paying a goddamn bit of attention. According to Huxley, they were whispering to each other, laughing, picking their noses, doodling with their quills.
Yeah, Marcus, we know because we've pitched shows to television networks, and we know the look.
Yeah,
we know the look through you towards a clock in another office.
Oh, yeah. We are not attractive. We're not young. I don't even understand why they met with us. Most of those places, TBS, very funny indeed. Didn't seem to like our sense of humor very much. But
first poop of the day.
Did I tell you that I was recently back in TBS?
Oh, were you really?
And I did it again.
I did it out of spite.
I did it to show Dave. Oh, man, it was
fun. See, you sunk another meeting.
Yep.
I love it. First poop of the day.
Yep. Starter log.
There you go. That's kind of I think we explained that story on a back episode.
I think we did.
It was just
someone mentioned starter logs in a TV pitch meeting, and Henry said, that's what I call the first poop of the day.
First poop of the day.
And then he told the TV executive that he looked like Ted Bundy. And that was the end of it.
He did. Well, I don't want to go back.
I told a very innocuous joke about how you give me a starter log and I can start a fire. And then you said, "You know what I call the first log of the day? Starter log, first poop of the day."
Hey, by the way, anyone ever told you look like Ted Bundy?
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, man, what do you want from me? It's us.
It literally was the closest thing to Tommy Boy, where it's just like, do you validate? You guys in the Kiel Corner puking his guts out.
Well, it was in the moment. The Grandier was making a speech and staring at everybody, laughing, picking their nose, not giving a shit. And it was in that moment the Grandier finally accepted that he was well and truly fucked.
Oh.
And he was. The verdict was unanimous. Grandier was to be tied to the stake and burned alive, after which his ashes were to be scattered to the four winds.
And I tell you what, this is the only time I've heard being tied to a stake as being bad news. Oh, well, I will go to my death with another bombed attempt at humor.
That one almost saved your life, though. Almost saved your life. That was quite funny if you think about steak as a food.
Oh, yeah.
It's a play upon words. Steak are homonyms. Airplane bathrooms.
Yeah.
I will not be removed.
Anyway, that is a really funny bit. I just told my cousin Carlos Mencia that joke, and he has said he's going to use it in his next HBO special. So,
well, just being burned at the stake would have been bad enough. But the judges also decided to subject Grandier to the question, both ordinary and extraordinary.
Ooh, what's that?
What that meant was that Grandier was to be heavily tortured before his sentence was carried out in order to elicit a full confession using both torture and super torture.
Once again, guys, I do think this is a misunderstanding. Just want to let you know.
So what kind of screams you'll think you'll make when we pierce you again and again?
Fuck!
Now, the night before Grandier received his sentence, he'd come to terms with how fucked he truly was, and he'd gone through a bit of a spiritual change.
Mm.
He'd realized that he'd been a bit of an asshole in his life, and while he knew he didn't deserve to be burned at the stake for it, he certainly hadn't helped himself much by talking shit about powerful people and getting his best friend's daughter pregnant.
Oh, how I wish I did not go on Howard Stern.
Yeah, I mean, he was just an asshole. Nowadays, we would just give him an AM radio show, and he would be like the number one disc jockey in Texas.
Yeah.
He would make an apology appearance on Joe Rogan and be fine.
Yeah. I mean, he did know that he would die, but he also had faith that when he was sent before the Heavenly Father for judgment, his soul would be clean.
Mm.
But in order for his soul to be clean, Grandieri could not and would not confess to anything he didn't do. Did I bed countless widows and chambermaids and peasant girls?
Yes!
Did I seduce my best friend's teenage daughter, get her pregnant, then abandon her?
Now that I'm thinking about it, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Did I consort with the devil to possess a convent of nuns for no real reason?
Mm.
Absolutely not. He doesn't pay his invoices.
Okay, so he went 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3. And while you might think a lot of people went to the stake defiant like Urbain Grandier, you'd be wrong.
Mm.
Some certainly did. But even Father Galfridi, who was executed 20 years earlier for pretty much the same thing as Urbain Grandier, signed a full confession before being burned.
Mm.
Mostly, this confession after the trial was a way for the church and the state to cover their ass.
Mm-hmm.
It was relatively easy to go to the stake still protesting your innocence if you just went from the courtroom to the fire. But if the sentence required a little stop at the torture chamber beforehand, most people ended up signing the confession that they were, in fact, a witch, just so they could make their last moments on Earth a little more comfortable, which is totally understandable.
Ooh, absolutely. We toured the Torture Museum in Naples, and that is some scary stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe it'll end early, and then you can be done with it. But I will say that's one thing about Urbain Grandier, is that he definitely stuck by his guns. Like, in many ways, he was a bad dude. But in many ways, he was an enlightened man. Like, he understood, like, he did some good for Loudon besides just sticking it in the bush. He was also, like, he was the center of essentially new modern thought, trying to teach people how to, like, drag people from the medieval times to the modern times. But that gets you killed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My favorite little torture device that they had, not the worst torture device, you don't die, but if you were found guilty of public drunkenness over and over again, they made you wear a barrel.
You would love it.
It wouldn't have even covered my crotch. It was very soft. But I think the worst one is like the horse one, where they put the weights on your ankles and you sit on that like triangle thing.
The Spanish donkey.
We were in Tulum, go seeing some ruins, and those are also some tiny people. The old Italians were tiny people. That barrel would cover their entire family.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the anal pair was also particularly bad.
Yeah, they would heat it up.
Yeah.
Ooh. Mm.
The thing is about Urbain Grandier is that he was not going to confess to jack shit.
Mm.
Now, in other cases, it might not have been so bad, but in this case, the Cardinal and Laubardemont needed that fucking confession. If Grandier confessed, the ends would justify the means, and it would provide further precedent for future inquisitions, thereby securing the cardinal's power. If Grandier didn't confess, then it was all for naught. In other words, Grandier was in for a really terrible fucking day.
Yikes.
All right, guys, fucking hold yourselves, because this is a bad Sunday afternoon.
This is where it gets a little nasty?
Yeah.
Okay, the torture is about to commence.
First, Laubardemont ordered Grandier to be completely shaved from head to toe, even removing his eyebrows.
Well, that's physically embarrassing, guys. It's not so much like it's not painful.
When
it's
you
just
remove my curls from my bottom and my top, I appear to be a giant, hard infant.
Well, that was a part of it, you know, is to make him look like a clown, removing his eyes. I mean, it's to make him look as ridiculous as humanly possible. Mm. If you don't have any eyebrows, you look weird.
No, that's not true. We have a lot of listeners without eyebrows, and we love them.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I love a good no eyebrows.
I don't mind no eyebrows. Eyebrows don't show up in pictures of me at night, like, because my eyebrows are very faint, so I do look like an evil, egg-headed man.
Well, I gotta say, and this is a question for, I don't know, people who study evolution, why do we even got the eyebrows in the first place?
They're extremely essential. They keep sweat out of your eyes. That's what they're there for.
But you don't sweat a lot, Kessel, unless you're under pressure from the government. So well, I understand.
No, do they really keep the sweat out of your eyes?
Yeah, eyebrows they keep sweat out of your eyes. That's why we have them.
They collect mites. 50-50. They collect mites, and they used to connect to our hairline.
Yeah, I know. That was the whole point. I don't think we need the eyebrows. That's all I'm going to say.
Shave your eyebrows.
Do it.
Shave your eyebrows. Do
I'll
it.
I'll lose them. I'll lose my eyebrows at some point when I get older.
Well, at the official shaving, La Bardement had also wanted to remove Grandier's fingernails.
Ooh.
He's like, yeah, you shaved him? All right, take his fingernails off.
That's not hair, sir.
Yeah, but the guy that was tasked with the shaving said, if you want his fingernails taken, you take them.
Oh.
Yeah, because I got a union break in about 15 minutes, and then I got another union break after that. So
yeah. That
really isn't work. I'm over now.
Yeah. Well, that was too much for La Bardement. He's like, okay, fine. Just fucking whatever. Just move him along.
Okay.
Well, we're going to burn him, so let's just fucking get on with it.
Yeah.
All right.
So Grandier was given 15 minutes to make his peace with God before he was put to the question.
Okay, Galt, how about this? Oh, God. Women drive carriages far more erratic than men drive carriages. And isn't it interesting if you fart in an elevator? How rude is that, God? Is that funny?
Very funny.
Oh, is that TBS?
First poop of the day.
First poop of the day. Well, honestly, good stuff. Different carriage drivers. Different. Yeah, absolutely.
Then, when the clock struck the appointed time, Grandier was bound and stretched out on the floor in front of the executioner. There, the executioner, La Bardement, three exorcist monks, and eight other spectators introduced Grandier to the boot.
What's the boot?
The boot was a particularly inventive form of torture in which the legs would be tightly encased in four wooden boards. The outer pair of boards stayed prone, while the two inner boards were free to move.
Hmm.
The torture came when wooden wedges of increasing size were hammered in between the boards, slowly crushing the bones in the victim's legs and feet.
These are not easy things to come up with. What about just trying to get an engine in a car? Why focus on torture devices so much?
They literally could have just cut his toes off.
Yeah.
They could have done anything.
You could just go like clip, 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 but, you know.
They could have found a way to make, sliced bread.
Yeah.
It didn't happen until in the 1900s.
1927, I think.
Come on! Why is it that human nature is to only invent things when it's like, we can hurt someone with that?
Uh-huh.
It's very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
But before they were to start the torture, the priests had to exorcise everything. The ropes, the boards, the wedges, the mallets, all of it had to be sprinkled in holy water to drive the devils out, lest the devils give Grandier any comfort. Well, after they exorcised everything, the first wedge was placed between the knees.
Ooh.
And the executioner brought down the hammer with a swift blow, instantly shattering Grandier's kneecaps.
Ooh.
Grandier screamed, and priests asked if he would confess. But Grandier refused.
No! No!
That's incredible.
Yeah. Then came the feet. Again, a wedge was placed in the proper spot. But if you were hammering in these wedges, you could either do it in one swift motion, or you could do it slowly. So this time, the executioner broke Grandier's feet slowly, tapping it until his feet were crushed.
What do you think is better there, slow or fast?
Fast!
You think so?
Yeah!
I don't know. Isn't it funny? You might as well sign your checks over to your wife so she can directly put them into her bank account.
That is a good one. Carlos Mencia, did you write that down? I did. All right.
Then came another wedge in another place, and another, and another, and another. Eight wedges in all, each one thicker than the last, until damn near every bone from the femur to the toes were shattered. In Huxley's words, their splinters projected through the mangled flesh, and along with the blood, there was an ooze of marrow. But still, the friars could extort no admission of guilt, only that screaming and, in the intervals, the whispered name of God.
Bound in hell!
That's a fucking scream.
At some point, do you just go numb? Like, how much?
You
like
go into shock.
To this, yeah, the shock, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, people, I think I would have passed out already.
Mm-hmm.
Easy.
But now, after all 8 wedges were used, that officially ended the ordinary part of the torture.
Mm.
But Laubardemont and the priests wanted more. So they ordered the executioner to go to the storeroom to find more wedges for the purpose of extraordinary torture.
And now De Silly will enter. He will do a thing called tickle torture. That's what he...
I start with the little teats.
But when the executioner came back with just 2 more wedges that were no thicker than the ones that they'd already used...
It sounds like a bunch of ladies on a beach vacation looking for the shoots.
This is crazy. Who was on wedge supply?
No, well, usually they only do 8. It's like 8's enough. That's extraordinary torture because they did actually have certain guidelines set out. It's like 8, what's extraordinary? Or what's ordinary torture? 8. What's extraordinary? And 2 more.
They need to fire the manager. That's a failed inventory check right there. You got to make sure they have enough wedges.
Yeah, well, he came back with 2 more.
Okay.
But that wasn't good enough, so Laubardemont and the monks, they started brainstorming as to how they were going to keep this thing going. And they saw that they could fit just a couple more wedges into the device by replacing wedge number 7 at the knee with wedge number 8 down at the ankle.
It's like Tetris for sociopaths.
Then they decided to get in on the action themselves. Taking the hammer from the executioner, Father Lactance inserted his wedge and started hammering. And with each blow, he yelled, "Dicus! Dicus!" which means, "Tell me," in Latin.
God, that's so much fun. I you know what I would almost say is, because like, I wonder if it's yelling or if it's one of it's like, "Dicus! Dicus now!"
Oh, God.
My goodness. He just wanted him to talk. Huh?
He's just screaming, "Why is the volume of commercials so much louder than the television show?"
That's a good point.
Television is a magic box with the plays inside of them.
That is a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, after Father Lactance was finished, he handed the mallet over to Father Tranquille, who was able to drive the final wedge into the device in only 3 strokes.
Hmm.
And still, over the entirety of the 45-minute-long ordeal, Grandier had not confessed.
You could just see him just going like, "I'm not going to fucking tell you shit. I'm not telling you nothing."
It's just like him squirming, as just like his legs just looking like fucking piles of ragu attached to his thighs.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, he's sticking to his guns here, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I respect him for that.
Well, Grandier was then taken out of the boot and dragged to a bench where he was laid down, not to rest, but to be harangued by Laubardemont.
What's a haranguing?
Is bothering him.
Oh, just bothering him.
Yeah.
So now he's just going to go from getting his legs, ankles, kneecaps busted to just being aggravated?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem like that's not a lateral move when it comes to torture.
No, but it definitely is the thing of him putting his finger like right above his forehead and going, "I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you."
And now the true torture: you will go into a room alone with Holden McNeely from Wizard and the Bruiser. You will be harassed.
Henry, I ate one of your free sandwiches that you left in the fridge of the studio. It was like kind of old.
Put me back in the boot! Put me back in the boot!
For 2 hours, Laubardemont tried to get Grandier to confess. But Grandier, who was pretty much just in shock at this point, still refused.
So he's literally just like, "Sorcerer says what?
Yeah.
Sorcerer says what? What? Oh, is that a confession? What?
It's a funny idea and it's a funny trick. Fine. No, that's going to be a no from me, dog."
So Laubardemont said, "To hell with it. Just burn the son of a bitch. I don't care anymore."
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other part of Grandier's sentence was that he had to stop at both his own church and at the nunnery to beg God and the people for forgiveness. And Laubardemont thought this would be a nice bit of PR, showing the people what an evil man Grandier had been by showing just how contrite he could be, because Laubardemont thought that the boot would break Grandier.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, people just saw Grandier as broken and bloody, but still somehow charmingly defiant.
Do you see how they turned my feet into pasta? I'm just dragging them back and forth with these two fucking, like, squiggly legs.
Yeah, what did they do, the walking confession thing before they broke his legs?
No, they didn't. They put him up in a horse cart and then took him there. And that's the thing, is that when he was plopped down in front of his old church because he had no knees on which to kneel, a friend pushed through the crowd and embraced him.
You know what they say, my good friend. No knees is good knees.
That's good. That's good. I love it. So he's being carted around like Marlon Brando from the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes.
Just pale and broken.
Well, Bardemont thought that the crowd was going to be in a frenzy upon seeing Grandier, that the soldiers would have to keep them from lynching their former parson. But instead, the crowd was only moved by a display of loyalty and friendship. Then, when they got to the convent, Grandier refused to ask forgiveness of Sister Jeanne and the other nuns, because he said he'd never done them any harm whatsoever, and he could only pray that God would forgive them.
Whoa.
Yeah. He flipped it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Put them on trial.
That's what my mom does. Yeah. That's my mom, yeah.
Then they came to St. Croix Square, the site of the execution. 6,000 people had managed to fit into a space meant for half that many, with some of them hanging out windows or sitting on roofs. It was so crowded that it took half an hour for the guards to bring Grandier 100 yards through the crowd. Now, the stake itself was 15 feet high, and around the base were piled layers of logs, bundled sticks, and straw. But since Grandier could no longer stand because his legs were destroyed, they had to fasten an iron seat a couple of feet above the firewood.
Oh, God. And Grandier's last joke, of course, was, oh, is that a starter log in that fire there? That's going to be interesting to know what I call
that's
a starter log.
That's what I call my first poop of the day. But
kill
again,
him!
They were like,
kill
that's
him!
Incredible!
Burn
incredible.
Him!
After the seat was fashioned, Grandier was lifted up and lashed to the post.
Ooh.
Behind him was the church where he had served for years. And when he looked up, he saw, right in front of him, the home of Louis Trinquant, his former best friend. So Trinquant, Canemignon, and a few of Grandier's other enemies had decided to make a day of Grandier's execution.
Yeah, let's make a day of it. Let's make a day of it. Theme it.
They were having a party in Trinquant's drawing room, which overlooked the square, and they were all drunk on wine, laughing triumphantly, and waving at Urbain Grandier.
Honestly, that would have been fun.
The way to flip it is that, again, you go like, isn't this crazy? Is this how we're seeing each other again? Isn't this just the way it would have been, you know?
Now, there was some mercy attempted. The captain of the guard, a man named Lagrange, believed in Grandier's innocence. He'd promised Grandier two things. Grandier would be allowed to speak before sentence was carried out, and he would be strangled to death before being burned. But Lagrange didn't count on the exorcists. Father Tranquille, Father Lactance, and another priest named Father Archangel.
Whoa, he's from X-Men.
Come on, yeah.
These guys had followed close behind Grandier's procession and were now exorcising everything from the wood to the executioner himself. Grandier tried to speak, as was promised, but Father Tranquille struck him in the mouth with an iron crucifix.
Mm.
And all the time, Father Lactance was yelling, "Dicas! Dicas!" He told Grandier to confess again and again, saying that he had only a moment to live. And to that, Grandier said,
"Only a moment. Only a moment, and then I go to that just and fearful judgment to which, Reverend Father, you too must soon be called."
And with that, Father Lactance took it upon himself to begin the proceedings, and he lit the straw for the pyre. Following his lead, another priest set fire on the other side, and the execution unofficially began.
Mm.
Grandier called out to Lagrange, asking him if this was what he had promised. But LaGrange hadn't been paying attention to the priests, so when he saw that they'd set fire without his say-so, he started trying to stamp out the fires so he could keep his promise.
But the thing is, he kept setting fire to his super long beard, and his double guitars on his belt would get in the way.
But as soon as one fire was stamped out, there was another priest behind LaGrange setting another flame. So knowing that it was a lost cause, LaGrange figured he could at least make good on his promise to strangle Grandier to give a little mercy. But when he got to the noose, he found that the priests played a little prank. They'd knotted the rope so it couldn't be used.
Now that's good humor.
That's funny.
Now that is fun.
By the time LaGrange got the knots undone, Grandier was being fully consumed by the flames.
It sounds like the first version of the whack-a-mole game.
It does.
But instead of moles, it's just a bunch of fires you're trying to put out to save someone that you believe is innocent.
It does. And I have about 7 more ZZ Top jokes that I haven't added to this narrative.
We'll do an uncle corner at the end. You can just bust them all out.
And as the fire grew larger and larger and Grandier began screaming, the priests entered a chanting exorcistic ecstasy, which only stopped when Grandier started coughing. Not content to let Grandier suffocate, as people usually did when they were burned at the stake, Father Lactance used holy water to control the fire enough where he could keep smoke from entering Grandier's lungs.
Oh, God.
And it worked. There was one final scream, then silence.
Ah!
Well, I don't know if it was...
Mom!
Let me tell you, airplane, food!
It was thought that Grandier was dead, but suddenly words began coming from the charred, blackened thing still tied to the stake.
Oh, it's like the end of Chucky.
Yeah.
What is it?
And as his last words...
Child's play, yeah.
And as his last words, Grandier said...
Forgive my enemies.
Then the rope which had bound Grandier to the stake gave way. He tumbled forward and died there on the hot coals, with exorcists still chanting while flinging holy water on his burning body.
Whoa.
Fucking, that's how you gotta go out, dude.
Oh. Wow, okay.
Once the fire burned out, the executioner scattered 4 shovelfuls of ashes to each point on the compass. Then the crowd surged forward to pick through the remains, hunting for teeth, bone fragments, or burned flesh to use as a holy relic.
It's like catching a baseball at a baseball game?
Yeah,
is that what they were doing? The kid was like, I want that tooth, but then an old man grabbed it before him and didn't give it to him?
Dude, it works either way. It doesn't matter whether you think he's innocent or guilty, because if he's innocent, then you got the holy relic of a martyr. If he's guilty, you got the holy relic of a witch.
But either way, you're siphoning through human remains in and coal on a street in France.
Yes.
Okay. I appreciate how they were just straight up with what they wanted, and they weren't pretending, being like, this is just to preserve the memory of Urbain Grandier. Like, no, it was very much been like, give it me! I want his guts!
You get? You can maybe get nails and you can get teeth. Everything else is pretty much burnt. I guess you can get some flesh.
You can get teeth, skull fragments, usually, because the skull's pretty thick.
Bones. Yeah.
You can get fragments, things like that.
Okay.
Then, the next day, the priests actually did a post-game with the devils that were still possessing Sister Jean.
They brought John Gruden in, he wrote up on the board, he did a little QB
conversation.
They reported that Satan had been frustrated by the exorcist efforts, because if the priests hadn't been there and hadn't sprinkled everything with holy water, then Grandier would have felt nothing. But thanks to Fathers Lactance, Tranquille, and Archangel, Grandier suffered immensely every step of the way.
And so that's good or bad?
Good.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah. Strangely, though, the men involved in the execution began dying mysterious deaths soon after. Lactance was supposedly filled with demons himself, haunted by the screams of Grandier under torture. Exactly 1 month after Grandier's execution, Father Lactance knocked a crucifix out of the hand of a priest and died of a fever.
Oh.
Then, shortly after Lactance died, the surgeon who had conspired against Grandier died after supposedly seeing Urbain's naked ghost.
Hello, wake up, wake up. Can you see my phantom wiener? I'm a grower, not a shower!
Well, he's making him laugh in the afterlife. That's what
I
matters.
Got him finally. There's one him. Little smile.
Father Tranquille, he lasted a few more years, but he died horribly as well. He was stricken by a stomach ailment supposedly caused by demons. And it was written that after days and days of vomiting, quote,
he was vomiting filth and stinks so insupportable that his attendants had to throw them out without delay. So fearfully was the room infected by them.
Ooh. Fittingly, though, at Father Tranquille's funeral, people also rushed his casket for a chance at a holy relic, smashing the coffin and ripping his clothes from his body. It was only the guards present who kept the spectators from ripping apart Father Tranquille's corpse.
Mm.
And of course, Grandier's death did nothing to alleviate the good sisters of Loudon. Sister Jeanne even had a false pregnancy that she tried to cut out of herself and baptize before she smothered the devil baby, because of course abortion's wrong.
It sounds like she did it all very violent version of it.
But yes. Right before she was sitting there, she had cut a hole in her chemist. She was about to fucking slice her stomach open to pull the baby out, but she was supposedly stopped at the last minute by a vision of Jesus.
Okay.
And the false pregnancy did disappear after Sister Jeanne vomited up a whole bunch of blood, but she was still trotted out day after day, still saying, fuck me, over and over again in public exorcisms.
I mean, now it's just her bit. She just has this thing on lockdown. She knows what to do.
That is what you do. You get your show together and you go on the road with it. Yeah. She knows what she was doing. Mm-hmm. You're a hunchback. You're kind of sexy. You're getting out there. Honestly, more power to her.
Yeah.
Well, not quite more power to her. She is a
less power. She did get a man murdered.
Yeah.
It was back in the day. No one was innocent then.
Yeah, could be.
Eventually, though, people started to lose interest, and it was only after a demon named Zabulon appeared to Sister Jeanne was she given the secret to make it all end. Zabulon told her that he would only leave, and all of the demons would only leave, if Sister Jeanne visited the tomb of St. Francis de Sales in Italy. And so, after a nice vacation to Italy, the demons left.
She just got a vacation to Italy.
Yeah.
This dude got burnt at the stake and his legs broken from the kneecaps down, and she got a vacation like she won Wheel.
Yeah. She took a nice vacation to Italy. The demons left, and she was troubled no more.
Oh, my God. So she has the greatest out of all the stories.
Yeah. As far as the other players went, most faded into history, except Cardinal Richelieu. He played a huge part in French history. He was also played by Tim Curry in that terrible Three Musketeers movie with Oliver Platt.
We don't remember that one.
Yeah.
We don't remember that Tim Curry vehicle.
Yeah, the one where everyone had English accents except Oliver Platt, Kiefer Sutherland, Chris O'Donnell, and Charlie Sheen.
I think that's my favorite when they just hire actors. Like, what was the guy who played James Bond, the Irish dude? Remember, it was older.
Daniel Craig.
Not Daniel Craig.
Brosnan.
No, not Pierce Brosnan.
Jacob Raguda.
I don't know. But anyway, he never changes his accent.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I also say Oliver Platt was the one because Jackie, my sister Jackie, she always had the crush on the off one.
Yeah.
So she was crushed. She crushed on Lance Bass. I want to say she crushed on the other dude with the weird lined up chin hair.
From
Backstreet, the other guy. And then Jackie was sexually obsessed with Oliver Platt from that movie.
From that one in particular.
Yeah.
I believe it. Oh, I was thinking of Sean Connery.
He's the
Scottish.
Most famous James
Irish.
Bond of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, Scottish. Yes. He always has that accent. I could see Oliver Platt and Jackie getting along in real life. I'm sure he lives in Los Angeles. And Jackie is, by the way, we have to plug Jackie here at the end of this episode when it comes to the sausage championship she's looking to get, but I have some info on that.
As far as Urbain Grandier went, it's likely he probably would have been just as happy to not go down in history at all. Just living his life as a small-town, fancy-free priest until the end of his days. Mm. But as it was, Urbain Grandier stands as a lesson as to how powerful mass delusion can be when it's put in the hands of truly evil men with absolute power.
Absolutely. Wow, awesome. Wow. There it is, Devils of Loudon. There it is. That was great.
Yeah.
What an interesting history lesson. Some good humor as well.
I love this shit. I love Exorcist.
Yeah.
And all of this stuff. I want to find a real one, though. One day we'll find a good, solid
Yep. Real possessions case.
But that's a great lesson, though, to take away from all of this. And it mass hysteria happens all the time. And we're living in a world of mass hysteria now. Maybe even more so than they had back then, because now it's global.
Mm.
Which isn't that nice.
Yeah.
Now we have these programming machines that we call our phones that are all built upon algorithms that are built to hypnotize us and convince us of absolutely everything. We're constantly inundated by all of the various advertising agents that are essentially just now wings of the government that convince us to buy their products in order to feel whole spiritually and psychically.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening, Henry. I got a text message from Q. He's actually texting me now. I signed it up. It's only 99 cents for me to get the text. So it's not a scam. It's not a scam. Awesome. Great episode, guys. So much fun. So we're going to be on the road.
Yeah.
So we had a whole bunch of shows to do on the road. I mentioned Jackie Zabrowski. This is true. Jackie wants to be the National Sausage and Hot Dog Council's Hot Dog Ambassador.
Yes.
Regional Hot Dog Ambassador. So go to hot-dog.org and vote for Jackie. I talked about this on Top Hat this week. She's got some stiff competition.
She does.
I think the guy's name is Beesman or something like that, who's in the West. So
I'm really afraid for her nitrate intake, but I understand that it's a ceremonial position, and hopefully she could do a lot more posing with hot dogs.
Yep.
And just more of just the celebration that hot dogs are a fun smoothie of meat, and anything should be allowed to go in there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Hot-dog.org.
Speaking of us on the road, we have, like, most of our shows have been sold out. Thank you, Satan, for your gifts. But we got some tickets available. We got tickets in Vancouver. We got tickets in Salt Lake City. If you're in Salt Lake City, get your ass to the show.
Yeah.
Please.
Motivate people to come see our bullshit. We're going to have a good time. You get them out there. You get them dancing. We're going to burn a church down. No, we're not.
We're not going to burn a church down.
It's a big-ass church they got there.
Yeah.
It's a pretty famous one. But yeah, just tell them a wedding's going on. If I know anything about Salt Lake City, a lot of weddings, because everyone is dying to have sex, and you have to get married to do it according to the faith. So there you go.
Yeah, we're going to be going to Salt Lake City on May 19th and Vancouver on May 30th.
Cannot wait to see everybody on the road. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, we don't exist. We're like the Green Bay Packers. We're owned by the fans. We're all family here at Last Podcast Network. So thank you so much for giving to our Patreon. If you want to listen to, we got Henry and I do a small little interview series. We got some fun interviews on there. So feel free to listen to those. Enjoy them. Top Hat is everything political. Page 7, Wizard and the Bruiser. The Story Must Be Told. Check out all the shows here on the LPN Network or LP Network because it's not Last Podcast Network.
Huh.
You never that?
Huh.
Yeah. But yeah, so thank you all so much for the support. All the shows are doing so well. And and every time I get a lot of DMs on my Ben Kissel one on Instagram, and they'll be like, I just checked out whatever, and it's actually really good. And I'm like, yeah, all the shows are good.
Yeah.
Check them out.
Well, thank you guys for your continued support. And hail Satan.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Gein.
Magustalations.
Hail me. Because I'm very sunburnt from a honeymoon, and now the burn has gone away, and now I'm just itching.
Yep, and now you're just married.
Yeah, man. I love it.
I love it. I love it. And don't go with the flow. Everyone says go with the flow.
No.
You can be relaxed, but you don't have to go with the flow all the time, because sometimes it leads to people being burnt at the stake for no reason.
Jojo.
Be a reed in the storm.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.